What's going on, Dutch Nation? Today's episode, it's pretty rad. We have Steve Martinez. Now, he's a talent coordinator, and basically, if you have ever gone to Coacha, where you've wondered, hey, how do we get Dylan Francis, Kyle, Khalid, Macklemore? Well, basically, he's our guy. From Southern California, he's been all around the world, and a pretty interesting story. So, sit down, relax. You might learn something with this one, people.
Do you want me to start?
I'll yeah, Brant, start, dude. We
guys,
never hear
welcome.
Anymore.
Welcome.
Come on, man. I know you haven't been on here in a while.
Yeah, so this is a microphone. Is that correct?
Yes.
That is correct.
We are here on the red couch today. Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello.
My name is Brant Boersma. Today with me is my good friend, Coffee. Oh, we got Shane Tappan.
Hello.
Marcus Barriota.
Yeah, I got coffee too.
Mm. And we got a special guest. We got Steve Martinez in the house today.
Yo, what's up?
And nobody knows who he is.
Nah.
He's the guy that makes the magic.
Yeah.
I feel like Steve's the one that has contributed in catapulting our Coacha events to where they're at today.
Wow.
Absolutely.
I agree. And then even our leadership events too. Over the last couple of years, we've had the privilege of getting to have some pretty unreal talent and speakers come and partake. And that's all kind of due to our radical relationship with Steve Martinez.
I'm honored.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. You were saying how I should be touring and stuff. I didn't know what was that about. You didn't tell me more.
Yeah, the freestyle rap circuit.
The freestyle rap circuit is pretty strong. You were talking about how you are from L.A.
Yeah, originally from L.A.
From L.A. And now you live in Nashville?
Yeah. Live in Nashville. Actually, Franklin, a little kind of historic town about 20 minutes south of Nashville.
What is it that you exactly do? I know I kind of said it in a weird way that does not explain anything at all. But.
Well, it kind of goes back to how I even started in this business. I mean, it was purely accidental. I had no aspirations to be in entertainment whatsoever.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I fell in with the right people at the right time and the right season in my life.
Yeah.
To be a part of a group of people who were focusing more on relationships with the people that buy talent than the talent themselves. It was a sports and entertainment management company with a lot of influence. So they had a lot of big names under their umbrella and their roster and relationships all over the place. And so they didn't really need to foster those relationships anymore, but they discovered this new market that could be a supplemental revenue stream for the people that they represented. The philosophy of that was, let's focus on building good relationships with them so that we can be their go-to person when it comes to booking high-profile music artists or other celebrities, other high-profile people.
Do you just specifically do private shows?
I'd say that's about 80% of the bookings that we do. We do some hard tickets, soft tickets, concerts as well. And my background started in that area.
How long you been doing this? What would you call it yourself? Is it
artist management?
No, a more accurate term would probably be broker.
Yeah.
It's just like real estate.
Yeah.
In real estate, you have, a person who owns the home and then you have a buyer, right? Uh-huh. And the agent is going to represent one side or the other. And in some instances, they may represent both sides. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the position that we fill.
Totally.
We're providing a service for the artists that we work with, but more than that, more for me and my company, I want to provide a service for the people who are buying that talent.
Yeah.
In the end, that's what matters most. You know, artists come and go. People get hot for a little while, then you don't hear from them. For me, the value is in working with the people who are putting on events like what you guys do.
Yeah. For those of you guys out there that have never been to one of our Coacha events, we pour into our people, our broistas. Half the day, we're just kind of talking to them, history, culture, motivation, inspiration, direction, vision, all that fun stuff. At the end of the night, we have this kick-ass, incredible
celebration of life.
Celebration, and we bring in these artists. And the first time we ever did it was with Dylan Francis, and we kind of scrambled on our own, and it was rad. And now we're at a place where we've had Macklemore, we've had Khalid, we've had 21 Pilots, and it translated over to our other events, too. You've been a massive help.
I find it really interesting to kind of live between the worlds, too.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, your company is, like, so unique in so many different ways, and I'm not overstating this at all. You guys know your Coacha events more than anyone, but I mean, those are the best events I've ever done. You asked me how long I've been doing this, 24 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So out of all those events, these have been my favorite.
Yeah, they're fun.
But those are two different worlds. I mean, for the most part, the very corporate world, very structured, a lot of pressure, a lot of politics involved, you know, even when it comes to an incentive trip where you've got 500 people who are having a dinner and letting loose and they're being rewarded for all their work, but it's still very corporate. It has a corporate feel to it. And then you've got the rock and roll world. I mean, which is, it speaks entirely different language.
Yeah. You've gotten to travel around quite a bit.
Yeah. I feel very, very fortunate on that because growing up, my dad was a teacher and my mom was a clerk in the LA County court system. So we didn't have a whole lot of money. Our family vacations, I mean, they were rad. I mean, we went camping.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love it to this day. But we didn't travel outside of California, like ever. You know, but that was it. So like to travel as much as I have and to do what I do and enjoying it, I'm just so grateful.
How did you kind of dive into
you said
this crazy
kind
world.
Of fell into these with a group of people that were kind of already doing it?
As I was saying earlier, I had no aspirations in being entertainment. Mm-hmm. I wanted to actually be a homicide detective in the LA Sheriff's Department.
Really?
So that's growing up, one of my really close friends, his dad was a lieutenant in the department. Internally, I had a leaning towards a sense of justice. Through high school, I started doing ride-alongs. I was just going to go and try to find a way to apply for the department. But I was dating this girl who, she was one of these people who like knew what they wanted to be when they were 12.
Yeah.
Like she wanted to be a doctor. Her dad was a doctor. Right. And so she got accepted down at UCSD. And so I'm like, all right, that sounds like a cool place. So I'll go too. And I was studying political science and economics, the typical, you know, pre-LSAT kind of majors, then take the LSAT, go into law school. And that way, when I graduate, you know, you could be on the streets maybe for 2 years and then you get to pursue wherever you want to go because of the degrees. So that was my plan. After undergrad, I came back up to LA and lived with my parents just to kind of transition. I was getting ready for law school and just needed a job. I didn't even care what it was. I had a friend in college and she had moved up to LA a few months before I did. She was working for a manager who represented a lot of actors and models, mostly female models. So I'd go and like, you know, visit her for lunch.
That's a nice lunch.
I love visiting her. And,
tell her all the time.
Hey, I want to bring you lunch. To your friend.
For purely selfish reasons. She heard about this opening at this sports and entertainment management group. Again, knew nothing about entertainment. But I went in regardless and put in my application. Some of these jobs in Hollywood, especially in entertainment, it's great when it's kind of a word of mouth thing. The minute you put an ad out for like, someone, I used to, at the company I was with out in LA, they put me in charge of hiring for a little while. We'd put an ad out and I'd get 300 resumes in 2 days.
Oh my gosh.
And they saw Jerry Maguire, they saw something on TV and they're like, oh, that's not what I'm doing.
Every audition,
show me the money.
Every audition, they're auditioning
for a
job.
They think
that they're going to give you
No, but that's probably real. I mean, I'm sure people, I mean, so many people move to LA with the aspirations to be a star. And so they just probably see that as like, this is entry level. Just any way I can get in. But their motivation might be, oh, I want to be the next Tom Cruise.
Right. You know? Yeah. In that world, it's very intimidating.
Yeah.
When you don't know anything about it, you're just kind of walking in. There's a lot of glamour going on there. And so I dropped off my application. They're like, oh, I'm sorry. That was bad information. There's no opening. So now I'm feeling really embarrassed. So I'm leaving. And on the way out, I meet this guy who just was walking up the stairs. And we struck up a conversation. And he's like, hey, I'm on my way to Mavis. Do you want to talk for a little while? Keep going, right? Sure, okay. So I followed him up. So I walk right back into the office that I came out of. And it turns out he was the president of the company. And we chatted for about an hour, invited me to come back the following week and kind of observe what they do. Yeah. I couldn't really tell if he was offering me a job or not. So I came in and just started observing and, you know, I got on the payroll for $5 an hour, which I think was below minimum wage.
Would you make commission then? Is that how it would work?
Eventually. So, you know, this was before the internet, before cell phones. We had a data entry kind of like simple computer, and it was me and this other guy who were I guess we didn't have official titles, but it would probably be classified as interns. And we had a stack, you know, like a 6-inch thick book of names and phone numbers of people who were like decision makers, who were event planners, who were marketing people in corporate America. And our job was every day, cold call, every day, and drop the names that we represented.
I'm sorry, who are you?
Dave Morris used to do this.
No way.
Yeah, he lived in New York. Uh-huh. He was worked for us forever. He's one of Trav's best buddies. And my friend Luke did it for like 2 months. Both of them were doing that. And then he ended up becoming my graveyard guy. But I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, there weren't a lot of private events going on. At least there were meetings, corporate meetings, but they weren't hiring music artists. We had 50 football and baseball players that we represented, so they weren't hiring them to come in and speak. Maybe autographs, you know, but still, it was a sell on our part. And we would do this every day for I don't even know how many weeks. And we are sharing one phone and one computer. I'm just kind of working through this list. So you can imagine like you and me sitting there, you know, and I'm making phone calls and you're just having to sit there and listen to me and watch me. But wow, what a training ground. I was such an introvert in high school. Wow. You're forced to put yourself out there and ask for the deal.
Yeah.
So that was one half of it. The other half of it was we had to try and convince artists to do these events too, because at that time also, very few of them wanted to do it.
Yeah. It's like an ego thing? Or
I'll be seen as a sellout because I'm doing a corporate thing, or I'm on the downside of my career and why do I need this? So we are trying to also kind of discover where the market would fall in terms of how much money would it take for them to do it? Because, you know, usually there's a price.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, it ends up being anywhere from 50% to 100% more than what an artist would gross on a public concert. It's great money for them.
Sure.
And as I mentioned earlier, this is a time before internet, before social media. So when you did a private event, it really was private. Usually the people there, like they're the only ones that know.
What was the smallest private event you've ever done?
I've done a few for about 75 people. It might be a singer-songwriter kind of a feel.
Acoustic show.
Something like that. But in terms of like relative for a big act with small group, 150 people, Fleetwood Mac.
Wow.
Tom Petty. That kind of stuff blows me away.
You're like, no way.
Yeah.
To be a part of the 150 has got to be so unreal. Absolutely. And to be Tom Petty is kind of like, okay. Cool. All right, we're doing this. Show me the money.
Yeah.
How long were you doing that? What was your next step out of there?
After the cold calling and learning the process of drafting contracts and then advancing dates. Because in addition to building the relationships with the people who were buying talent, we also wanted to provide a service that was above and beyond what the agencies who were representing our artists were doing. And that had to do with advancing the logistics for the show, being there on site for every concert to make sure everything goes smoothly. So I was learning all that and then kind of creating my own base of buyers and clients that I would work with, and working with a lot of different artists at the same time, and sports personalities. I was an athlete growing up, so to work with people like Mike Ditka and Walter Payton and some of the baseball and football greats.
Yeah, you're like,
I was in heaven. Yeah, it was great. Lakers fan growing up, I did a ton of dates with like Michael Cooper and Magic Johnson and all these just like legends that I grew up admiring. That was a treat.
So when you were in that world and first getting introduced and exposed to all these big celebrities, was there ever a moment where you actually got really starstruck?
You're just like,
No, you know what? I don't know if I ever did. I think part of it had to do with because I didn't have any aspirations to be in that business. They're regular people to me. And I discovered along the way that, you know, because you spend a lot of time with them, that they were just regular, normal people who just wanted to have regular conversations with people who weren't after them for something. That's typically the extent of their relationships. There's got to be something, an angle. There's got to be something that they want from me, and that's why they're being nice to me. There are some really cool moments. I mean, obviously, like a group like Fleetwood Mac,
you know, legends.
And to be talking with Stevie Nicks. And
You're having to hide it.
You're having to hide it. You're keeping it cool. You keep your composure, Stevie, but kind of inside, you're just like taking a moment like, wow.
On the inside, you're like,
I guess kind of like fast forward a little bit, like how did our paths cross where you discovered Dutch Bros or we sought you out? Like how did that relationship start?
So I was with the sports entertainment group for about 19 years altogether. And I had actually moved out to Dallas during that time to help them further their business. Was out there for a few years before I felt it was time to go out on my own. So basically do what I was doing for them, but with my own shingle out front. Yeah. I was doing that for several years before moving out to Nashville. The music community, as you can probably imagine, it's all over. So I met a guy who is friends with Jason. Jason was talking to him about the challenges of working with entertainment and booking it and all that kind of stuff. And this guy said, yeah, I know someone that does that. Oh, cool. I'll hook you guys up. And we got together on the phone, and that was it. So Jason Hanlon was my first conversation, my first experience with Dutch Bros, like ever. That was it. And then I just started digging in into more about your story and who you guys are. And I loved it, man. I mean, it was instantly, I'm like, what can I do for you guys?
Nice. What was the first Dutch Bro coffee you ever had?
Whatever one is like the most caffeinated.
That's the cold
it's
brew. Cold.
Yeah, it's the cold brew in the cans, right?
Yeah.
I'm really not remembering it as well because the kicker is my favorite now. It's such so a simple, good. Easy guy, and like I'm so consistent about what I like. So like I just get kicker all the time. But Jason handed me a cold brew.
Didn't sleep that night.
Think I might have had two.
Oh.
I was wrecked, man. But it was cool.
I feel like we're apologizing to Steve all the time because I'm like, we're still figuring it out. We're still figuring out what we're doing. The beast has gotten bigger than we are for sure. And so now it's awesome to have somebody come in that knows how to do it, that knows that game. You had suggested having Super Duper Kyle come, you know?
Yeah.
He's a bro. He's a Dutch bro. You know, you could feel it. Even with the meet and greets and he sang happy birthday to people. I mean, it was just like, this dude cares. That whole Coacha event is to celebrate our broista, and he kind of just aligned with us so well, and it's been a huge blessing. Thanks, bro.
Yeah, well, I'm a big fan. Seriously, I'm not lying. I enjoy your events and your company and being around just the Dutch Bros family more than anything. Really is like the highlight.
It's awesome,
for us.
Man, for
what would you say is the most challenging part about your line of work?
Sometimes delivering the artists, if they're not available or one reason or another, they have to turn down the offer invitation. That's hard because now we're going to plan B. We may even be going to plan C. And I just don't like that. What I enjoy most is seeing a show come together and see all the people excited and happy that are watching the show, and then seeing all the people behind the scenes get, you know, pats on the back and high-fiving each other because it just went off like in such an amazing way. So when I don't get that plan A artist, you know, I already start playing that head in my head and thinking, oh no. Working with so many different artists, it's really helped us a lot with that selection process when it comes to, hey, we have X amount of money, and here's our audience. Here's what we do. Who do you suggest?
Yeah.
To your credit, you know, and something that I love about Dutch Bros is that you guys really listen to your broistas.
Yeah.
Who are they listening to? What gets them excited? That doesn't happen all the time. A lot of private corporate events, it's usually like, you know, whoever the CEO likes or whoever like a small committee of executives like.
Brant, what did you hear? I saw you posted who should play a coach at 2019.
About it.
Yeah, I saw that.
Dude, so many people are just saying Post Malone.
Post Malone.
A lot of Odessa. Mm. There's some random ones too. Like one person just wrote country.
There's like 10 festivals going on right now.
Go to the Jamboree. I mean, and then that was one that we kind of had tried to figure out this year, and it just didn't work out. Our people aren't so set on just one person. I have a long-term goal of it being like a three-day music festival of coaches.
That'd be amazing. So
and during the day it's just you have speakers, but at night you have these great concerts, you know.
My favorite thing to tell people is when they ask who's performing, I'm like, it's Drake. So.
that was also on there quite a bit. I don't know if Drake is a possibility for us. You know, if everybody takes $1 from their tip money, you know, $1 every day.
I do get a lot of people though who ask me, it's like, how do we get like a Macklemore or, you know, a Khalid and everything? And I'm like, oh, we have a person that helps. Their follow-up question is like, how does he do it? Do you go to their management? Do you go to the label? What's the process of getting like this talent?
Every artist is different. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's their agent. Sometimes it's their manager. Yeah. Sometimes it's the artist direct. The business itself is actually very small. The group of people that I work with at each of those levels, the mass majority have been it as long as I have.
Yeah.
So we have all known each other for all these years, kind of going through the ranks and going through what we do.
Totally.
So when I call them up, the trust has already been developed.
Yeah.
And most times I've worked with them before. They know me. They know I would not put their artist in a position that would be bad for them.
Totally.
I mean, music is really a relationship-driven business internally, right? Yeah. I mean, the music is different when you're distributing it. But when it comes to live concert, personal appearances, that kind of stuff, it's really relationship-driven. There's not a whole big influx of new people that I have to get to know to make those deals happen.
I love being able to take an artist and bring them into the Dutch Bro world, you know, mm-hmm, and be like, absolutely. Hey, look at these people love you and we care for you. Yeah. Like, we don't want to just use you for your music. We want you to win.
Yeah.
I feel like the reason that you're so successful in what you're doing is because you want your people to win.
Yeah.
I've experienced behind the scenes enough to see that, like, there's not a lot of people that really care about the human aspect of it. Mm-hmm. They just care about the business aspect of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's why DB as a whole does so well, is because we're not in it for the money.
Yeah.
We're in it for the relationships, the impact that we can make on the communities, and the impacts that we can make on the individuals to go out and live. Steve's such a huge asset to our team. He is a Dutch bro, you know?
He knows.
Bam,
now. Well, and I love that's what Trav's been saying a lot lately. It's like a big goal of his is he would love to change the mindset of how business is done globally.
Right.
And I love that, like, you've been able to bring us these high-profile artists that see, like, a corporate gig isn't always a corporate gig it's somebody like Dutch Bros.
Yeah.
Like, this is pretty bitchin'.
Yeah.
And, like, we should do more things like that. Just starts that conversation and creates that awareness of, like, invest in your people, man.
Yeah. One of my favorite things to do in booking talent for you guys is telling your story. Now that we've had a few years together, not only can I tell the story that I think anyone could find if you were to go online or whatever, but tell the story of the last few years and the history of your interaction and the type of events that you guys do. And then beyond that, really the purpose of the Coachella events.
Yeah.
To me, they're just phenomenal because they're reflective of the company's DNA and investing into people for who they are, the dignity of them as individuals, and encouraging them to be better people for themselves, for their community, for people around them, without any expectation of some kind of a return.
Yeah.
The majority of people that work in the stands are there temporarily. They're going to move on somewhere else. And you've got other industries who have the similar kind of employee demographic that do not approach it that way. What they're trying to do is use that person as much as they can for those few years that they have them and then try to sell them why they need to stay. And instead, you guys are almost like, pushing them out the door, but it seems like that for no other reason other than you believe in them.
Yeah.
You are giving them encouragement in that way because it's so authentic. I think people recognize that, the people that work for you, and all of a sudden they're like loyal and they want to stay.
Totally.
They want to become an operator and continue working with the company. And if they have dreams to go elsewhere, the impact that those few years had on them in working for Dutch Bros is going to just end up building into whatever they do next.
Yeah.
Like, I love charitable organizations. I also believe that corporations can be just as noble, if not more, in what they do.
Yeah.
When you think about it, when you provide a good service for people, you're creating jobs, benefiting other people, their families, future generations. I mean, the impact that you have of running a good business and having a business that has a philosophy of, like, pouring and investing in people, you can't measure that.
Yeah. How many people do you work with?
You mean that I employ?
Yeah.
It's actually just Jamie and I. I'm interviewing some people right now because we want to step into some.
None of them are Dutch Bro employees. No. We'll send them your way, man.
One of the reasons why I left and started my own thing is just the freedom to be able to pursue the things that I want to pursue.
Yeah.
I chair this organization called Tennessee's Kids Belong that helps foster kids find forever families. So, and we do this really unique thing of recording them and asking them all kinds of questions, you know, about, like, how do you describe a perfect day? What's your definition of family? And allowing them to just answer these questions. The purpose of all that is then to show their video online so that they have a voice and a face that could be shared with people who maybe are going to be looking to add to their family. Well, we're doing a video shoot on Thursday. And if I worked for someone else, at least for where I was before, would I be able to take that time off? No.
How long ago was that you just stepped out on your own?
That was 2012.
Was that kind of a little bit scary?
Yeah, for sure. The idea of starting over from scratch was a little daunting.
Kind of exciting too.
Yeah. So grateful for my wife, you know, and a family that is supportive of that. You know, all things. One of the things that became crystal clear for me in the last few years is just how precious time is.
Yeah.
When I come home, I take one of my kids out to lunch every week, weekly date nights with the wife, regularly meeting and being available for artists and other people who want to just sit down and just chat. They may just need some encouragement. A lot of that, though, I think is probably informed by my faith, because for me personally, I don't believe like I'm my family's provider.
Right.
You know, so that helps kind of lift the burden off of me. I think for everyone, you just have to like figure out what your priorities are in life.
Yeah.
I live half my career single, getting married and starting to have kids. Yeah. All of a sudden I started to realize in order to have a healthy family, they need to be prioritized.
Yeah.
And that means that if it's at 5:30 and there's still more work to be done, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I can leave it. It'll be there tomorrow.
Yeah. How do your kiddos, like, what do they think, like, when they see dad with, like, Khalid and, like, Kyle and all these guys? Do they just nerd out, or?
Part of me wishes that they did, but they, they don't. Cool. Yeah.
Dad, you look super lame.
They're never impressed by dad. Yeah.
They laugh because I just really get into, you know, some of the music and stuff like that. And I enjoy the music that they enjoy.
Yeah.
When Khalid was first coming out.
Yeah.
And I loved him. I'm like, hey, guys, this guy's going to be big. And I'm playing him all the time and stuff. They're like, Dad, stop. And then, you know, 6 months later, they're like,
Dad, put Khalid.
Yeah.
Dad, have you heard this guy named Khalid?
Are you even now probably at a place? Because, I mean, your kids are, what, teenagers and stuff. Yeah. They're like, Dad, this guy's going to be hot next. Listen to this.
Yeah, yeah.
They're giving you the pointers now, you know.
Yeah, I listen to them a lot. I mean, I hear what they like and try to pay attention to that as much as I can. I wonder if there's like some kind of a program for people that would be interested in this line of work and for them to experience that if it's a few months out of the year or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, even to have like an internship out there. Music is such a huge part of our culture. I guarantee you there'd be a ton of people.
All right, I'll do it.
Shane's already interned. You know, believe it or not, Shane did intern out here even.
Did he?
For us. Shane the intern was his handle.
Shane the intern wasn't paid. He didn't get paid. We made him just do videos and stuff. I mean, he took volleyballs to the face. He did all kinds of stuff.
I shot with a paintball gun.
You know what, though? He drank a lot of free coffee, so I feel like he was getting kind of
true. There's kind of this thing that's out there that some do where, whether it's because of their education or their experience or maybe where they see themselves and maybe they want to work in marketing or advertising or whatever it is, they're looking for those jobs specifically.
Yeah.
And they're having a hard time landing them, or they're getting offered something that isn't right where they're going. Find a company where you like who they are. You like their philosophy of business. You like their DNA. You like the way that they function. You love their leadership, all that kind of stuff. And just work anywhere. Yeah. Work for free.
Yeah.
They're not going to turn it down. Work somewhere for them. If you're a hard worker and you're consistent at what you do, they're going to find a position for you somewhere.
Yeah.
You'll eventually get to like the department or whatever specifically you feel you're gifted in, but go get in there somewhere. Yeah. That's your story, Shane.
I was in the stands and I would just come out here because I just wanted more of it. And I'll never forget, you texted me, you're like, hey, we're recording, come sit in. And so I just sat in one day and then I sat in another day and another, and then it just led into me just doing whatever I could possibly do. Like, I was still in the stands and I'd book it out here to just do whatever.
Well, Steve, man, we appreciate you being on here, taking the time to spend with us. We always kind of like to wrap it up the same way. I'll kick it over to Shane because I like it when he gives this.
Yeah. So Steve, in your world and your life, if you could give any piece of advice to our barista audience, what would it be?
An attitude of gratitude and humility.
Yeah.
That's an easy thing probably to say just in terms of those words, but my question whenever I hear things like that is like, well, what does that look like? So this is where the advice would come in, is ask. Ask whether it's how to do something, right? Yeah. Or if there's a position or opportunity to ask, whatever they've done in the past, they've got like the kind of this portfolio that they like to either talk about or they show people, and they think that in doing so that they'll just be offered something,
yeah.
whether it's a job or an opportunity to do something. That is a reflection more so of pride. I don't want to say that's necessarily bad to do that, yeah. but when you ask someone, when you pose the question, you're in a position of humility. Almost like the difference between like saying I'm sorry and asking, will you forgive me from someone. When you ask them to forgive you, you're putting an enormous amount of power in their hands.
Yeah.
Because they can say yes or no, and you just have to take it.
Yeah.
Right? But you're leaving it up to them. And I think that's such a great position of respect. So like in the business world, it's okay to not know. You're going to go out and you're going to work for someone else, you know, to say, hey, I love what you do here. And here's what I do. I would love to come and make what you do even better. What can I do for you? I think just asking the question is a big part of that.
I think so many people are afraid to hear no. Well, and it's like, well, what's the worst thing by asking a question that you'll look stupid? Who cares?
Yeah. And you think about the source of that fear is because it injures their pride and their ego. To hear
which
no,
is actually
no
really weird. A good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a gut check. It's self-evaluation. And really a no is a reroute. It's not the end of your destination.
Exactly.
It's just now you just reroute.
Weakness is your greatest strength because it allows other people to come in. It makes it so much stronger than it ever was before.
A team can always do more than an individual.
Unless your name's LeBron.
That is true.
Or Steve Martinez.
Wow. He's got Jamie, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're absolutely right. It is the individual, you can only do so much.
Yeah.
When you have a great team behind you. And that's what I mean, honestly, where Coach is, man. We have a great team of people that contribute it, and Steve's just one of those people.
No, I'm grateful for it. Seriously.
Well, we're grateful for you, man. Thank you for taking the time to come out here on the Red Couch.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Well, later, Dutch Nation.
Love you.
Appreciate the coffee. Take it easy.
Peace.
Woo. Thanks.